All statements, views, and opinions are personal and do not directly represent the U.S. government, DOD, or the U.S. Army. Welcome to the Center for Army Lessons Learned podcast, Insights from the Fight, the podcast dedicated to bringing you lessons learned from exercises, warfighters, and Army fielded forces. I'm your host, Mr. Jeremy Sturmer. Today, we're discussing NCO development and NCO roles in training. While much of this discussion will focus on home station training, at times we may also discuss training as part of forward deployed units. Joining us today from Fort Bliss is Sergeant Major William Thacker. Sergeant Major Thacker entered the Army as a 19-kilo armored crewman and has served at every level from tank driver to brigade command sergeant major. Most recently, Sergeant Major Thacker served as the Operations Sergeant Major for 117 Infantry and Command Sergeant Major for 163 Armor. He is currently assigned as the Command Sergeant Major for 2nd Armored Brigade Combat Team, 1st Armored Division Strike. Sergeant Major Thacker is a graduate of the Sergeant Major's Course, Class 71, and holds a bachelor's degree in Workforce Development and Human Resource Management. Thank you for joining us today, Sergeant Major. Please take a moment and introduce yourself to our audience.
Yes, thanks for the opportunity. This is an exciting thing for a senior non-commissioned officer to have the privilege to do. So first, let me start by saying my name is William Thacker, and I'm an Iron Soldier, proudly serving in America's Tank Division. I'm married to my wife, Melissa. Me and my wife have been together roughly about 8 years, married about 6. We have 4 beautiful children. Been in the Army about 22 and a half years, a 19 kilo by trade. So armored crewman. As you mentioned this topic, the NCO's development and setting conditions for training, I kind of did some reflection on some of the assignments that I've had in my career where I first started really having the privilege to develop the non-commissioned officer corps at, you know, different echelons. And the first one was right here in this brigade from 2013 to 18. I was a platoon sergeant and left as a HHC brigade first sergeant. And I had a good group of mentors here. Most of them I still talk today. Command Sergeant Major Jason Schmidt, he's the current USIP Sergeant Major, was my battalion TSM. And with those mentors really put me on the path of where I am currently as sitting as a brigade TSM. Did my Ops Sergeant Major time up in JBLM, 117 Infantry. I got 9 months of good training there. And what I took out of that assignment is how important a discipline training management program really, truly is. And then a surprising element to that assignment was how important the Ops Sergeant Major role is in developing the NCO Corps on staff and really teaching them the MD&P process and how they fit in there. From there, I did my battalion TSM time in 163 Armor, 1st Infantry Division. I took responsibility, went straight to Europe. And from that assignment, not only our non-commissioned officer corps, but I had a privilege of training the Ukraine Army in their non-commissioned officer corps. From there, here at Fort Bliss, Texas, back again in Strike 7 in the 2nd Brigade, 1st Armor Division. Being in this position since October 31st, 2024, I've had the opportunity to not only mentor and develop and train first sergeants, but battalion command sergeant majors, which has also been very rewarding and a learning experience.
Pleasure to have you today, Sergeant Major. Let's jump right into today's topic. What are your expectations for sergeants and staff sergeants and how they prepare for training and what skills they demonstrate to those soldiers that they're leading?
That's a great question. So I'd like to go broad on this and then I'll narrow the answer down to that population, the sergeant, staff sergeant. So broadly, NCOs are responsible for individual to collective training. And we really reinforce that here in the 1st Armor Division. And within my brigade, I take it a step further. I tell my NCO Corps that we're responsible for individual through collective training. And I say that because there's a transition, a natural transition point of when you go into collective training where the commander or your officer counterpart takes the lead in terms of certification, but I'm a firm believer that the NCO Corps owes feedback to the commander and is an assistant in that certification process. From a sergeant, staff sergeant perspective, I expect them to be SMEs at 10-level tasks, and that's whether they're on a tank, RAD, if they're dismounted, If they're a fueler, 10 level task, they should be the subject matter experts. They're training the most impressionable population of soldiers, really where the rubber meets the road, or ground zero for developing our Army future leaders. And then I expect them to understand the 8-step training model and where they fall in. So step 3, they have a role in reconning. Step 5, rehearsals, they have a role in rehearsals. Step 6, the execution of the training. I mean, they are the trainers for the 10-level population. And then they have a role in the retraining process as well. And lastly, they must understand that they set the standards for all their soldiers to emulate.
So as you've seen the progression of soldiers over time, and you've got a lot of experience in the Army, a couple decades, what have you started to identify with yourself personally or with your peers as areas that you have to focus on in order to make sure that those young NCOs understand what those standards are that you expect them to maintain?
What I have noticed with the junior non-commissioned officer corps, and when I say junior, I mean sergeant, staff sergeant, senior non-commissioned officer begins at sergeant first class. You have to explain the why to them a lot more than I remember growing up in the Army. They really must understand why you're asking them to do the things you're asking them to do. And that could go from training to, probably speaking other subjects. But the other thing is you have to continue to follow up with them in the training, making sure that they understand. And what I really found, especially at the brigade level, if I go out to training now and I talk to a sergeant or I observe a sergeant teaching something or a staff sergeant, they really listen to the feedback that I give them and they take it to heart. And it was something that I had to be self-aware of first coming into position. I have such more of an impact now than I think I did as a platoon sergeant or even a tank commander when I engaged that population.
You talked a little bit about getting their buy-in. Where do you see the junior NCOs getting that understanding of their role in the process? Is it as a part of the company's training management and within that 8-step training model? Does it start with the annual or quarterly training guidance? Where do they start to get the buy-in to that they're a part of the training process?
So I think first it's messaging. If you look at annual training guidance or quarterly training guidance at the brigade level, that's really where it's starting for the organization. And then you talk about how does Sergeant Thacker receive that information. And so from a brigade level perspective, it is messaging, it's being present at training events, especially as a brigade command sergeant major, to ensure that my commander's guidance and intent is being met. At the company level, it absolutely starts with a training meeting. And I know we may talk about training meetings later, but this is a great segue. The Army does a great job for commanders in giving them a step-by-step structure of how a training meeting should be. And last week, I usually try to attend one or two company training meetings a month. Last week, I was with an armor company. And I also learned an important lesson. I will never tell a company I'm coming to the training ever again. I'll just show up. But in there, they were very, very rigid in the structure. They made sure, they hit every task that the Army's laid out for them. At the end, the feedback I gave that company commander was, as long as you're within that construct of what a training meeting should be, you're good. But more importantly, how that company commander, he or she, receives information and interprets information, and how that company commander gives that information back to his or her subordinates is more important than if it's a rigid, structured meeting. And that's really where that starts, because if that communication is there, the platoon leader, platoon sergeant understands the commander's guidance and intent on training, and that will trickle down to the sergeant level.
Well, we'll stay with how the company can support the 8-step training model. You talked about the links between individual and collective training. How much time do you think a company commander and first sergeant needs to spend on making sure that they've trained the NCOs on the standards for how those individual tasks translate into collective tasks before they actually try to execute them as a collective task?
One thing that we cannot get enough time is time. We can never get more time in a day. And so it's always are trained to standard, not time. So I would say however long it takes that company commander, first sergeant, feel confident that in step two, that those leaders that are gonna conduct the training are certified. The time is a resource we can never get back.
Well, let's talk about, you've obviously been serving as a sergeant major for a number of assignments now. How do you view the sergeant major and the op sergeant major's responsibility when it comes to training the platoon sergeant and the first sergeant to be the trainer of those young NCOs that are serving as team leaders and squad leaders? And then what do you find are the best ways to conduct that training and pass that experience on to them? Because anytime you take them away from their unit, they're not there to train with the unit. So how do you balance those things of establishing standards for how we're going to train our NCOs with that echelon that you're working at as you move up to the senior level?
Yeah, I mean, it's always a balance. And you have to be cognizant of your subordinates' time. As a brigade CSM, you know, when I came on board, I kind of looked, first of all, I looked at our LRTC to kind of see what our training glide path was going to be. And we jumped right into crew level gunnery as soon as I took responsibility. So I knew that my time was going to be limited with that population, the first arm population. And so I assumed some risk, and I've only pulled them away twice for professional development as a whole through that time period. I think leaders need to understand where their organizations are at. And you're absolutely right. If I pull that senior leader, that first sergeant, out of his or her company while we're in a individual to collective training glide path, that's going to be a detriment to that organization. Be cognizant of where your organization's at is the best advice I can give you. Understand that, you know, that you have to have a balance between professional development and the execution of training. And then when you do pull those senior non-commissioned officers out, make sure it's value added to their development and don't waste their time.
So speaking of that, what are some of the tools that you find are most effective at passing that information on in a short amount of time? Or is it a leader development program? Is it one-on-one battlefield circulation? Are there certain things that you find are the best ways to do it? I mean, sometimes it may even be email. What works for you in passing those messages on when you know that you're not going to be able to just assemble everybody at your leisure?
Yeah, it's attacking it from all angles, to be honest with you. There's some things that, you know, I utilize email just to distribute it to the larger group because I know I won't see them face-to-face. I mean, I have 42 first sergeants. That's a big population. Well, leader development program, I do that quarterly. And actually, this month I'm breaking my rule. We're going to hold two. One is going to focus on the new gunnery tables as we get ready to go into our next training glide path. And the other one's going to focus on the new shaving profile policy to make sure that all the senior non-commissioned officers across formation are flat on that and they understand their processes and they are going to be held to a standard. There's not one thing you can do. It has to be an approach, a holistic approach through many avenues. I love battlefield circulation. I was talking about earlier, the effect that you have as a senior non-commissioned officer when you come to a training event, you can see it in the soldiers' eyes And the best thing, and one of the most favorite things that I do as a CSM is be around soldiers. So it has to be a holistic approach.
Let me get your ideas on one other item. Not to date myself, but when I joined the Army in the early 90s, training management was a science, not an art. So the idea of managing the red, amber, green cycle was pretty ingrained into the Army that I came in. As you look at the Army that is getting back into using training management systems to build its proficiencies versus just preparing for the next deployment, how do you explain to soldiers and junior leaders more time dedicated to executing collective training is going to require that they pay a bill in doing red cycle taskings and not being able to train as a collective unit?
Sure. Again, time is a resource that we can never get enough of, and we can never get back. I would say it's even more challenging. I'm glad you asked this question. I would say that it's even more challenging given our mission requirements around the world today. And an example of that is it has become the norm for a brigade combat team to enter a CTC rotation, whether it be NCC, JROTC, you name it, at a T3, platoon live fire complete. And because of the mission requirements around the world, there's not enough time to get to a T2 or company live fire complete. And so NCOs, commanders, what I tell my formation is we have to get creative with training, and you have to look at different times that you can train multiple things simultaneously. And so with the armor formation, a great example of that is every Monday we have motor pool formation, and we conduct PMCS on our vehicles, right? And on a tank, there's four crewmen. Typically what happens is one or two of those crewmen are actually conducting PMCS and the other two are kind of, sitting around waiting for their first line leader or their sergeant to give them another task. But that is a great opportunity to bring your machine guns down to the tanks and work on GST. Paying the bill on the back end, the Army is, you're always going to have red, amber, green. There's always going to be 100 million tasks that a headquarters is going to ask you to execute, all the while you're trying to get ready for a mission, a CTC, et cetera. But really being creative with the time that you have and training more than, one thing, I think is key. Did that even answer the question?
Yeah, I think it did. So we started to talk about collective training. How do the members of the battalion that direct training, the commander, the sergeant major, the op sergeant major, the S3, ensure that that training is meeting the commander's vision and intent for building unit readiness?
Yeah, I mean, it starts with the commander's guidance, which we talked about earlier, kind of echelon, the annual training guidance and, follow on QTG guidance. And of course, that guidance is going to be nested with the higher headquarters. But the XO, the S3, and the op sergeant major, they all have a vital role really in guiding the staff to plan the training within the commander's guidance and intent. They also have a vital role in ensuring it's being resourced through a TRIM, the Training Resource Management Meeting. The command sergeant major, he or she advises throughout the process, but more importantly, is heavily relied on keeping really the pulse of the organization. And we talked about it, me going out to training events to ensure that it's being executed to standard, to ensure that it's executed within, my commander's guidance and intent. And then when I talked about, broadly speaking at the beginning, how the NCO Corps is responsible for training individual through collective, the CSM has a role in assisting the commander during that collective training period in certifying at echelon.
Excellent. You've talked a little bit about gunnery. As you look at that collective training event for the crew, what are some of the things that you find create the best results for crew proficiencies in your train up for executing your higher tables?
starting that foundation at crew level is key, and it's essential. You know, in 163 Armor, we were the first ones to shoot in 1st Infantry Division to shoot the new tables. And in my opinion, the new tables aren't much different than old tables. And, you know, when I came up, there was a table 8 was your qualifying, your crew level qualification table, and now it's, you know, table 6. A lot of the engagements that we had when I was a young soldier are back into the new tables. There is one challenging engagement. It's a manual engagement through auxiliary sights. And there's about a 15 degree separation between these targets. And so when we started our train up, I was very focused on that specific engagement, because the other engagements didn't really differ much. I mean, there was a little, you know, shorter time that you had for target exposure, et cetera, but didn't really differ much from previous tables. And so I had crews in CCTT going through this engagement, and we focused so much on this engagement that every crew scored a 90% or better on that engagement. But then the rest of the engagements, they really struggled. They really struggled. And our qualification scores plummeted. It was a very eye-opening experience.
You had talked earlier about sometimes a leader puts an emphasis in a particular area and has an unintended consequence. So if you were going to be going and doing a new set of gunnery tables 6 months from now, you know, what would be some of the things that you would change to avoid that pitfall?
Well, first, and I'm doing it for our next training progression as we get ready for these new tables. But first thing I would do is I would pull in tank commanders at the battalion level. I'd pull in tank commanders and gunners, rally commanders and gunners, and I would give them an LPD from a master gunner perspective on those engagements, so that they understood the RPMs, they understood, you know, the scores behind it, and they had a general understanding of what they were about to get themselves into. The second thing that I would do is get into CCTT early and often. A lot of times, the armor community, we use CCTT for really just maneuver training, but they have those tables in there, and that is a great opportunity to get a crew integrated early and often to really build the cohesion of the crew. The gunnery tables, you know, they're easy or hard, and an experienced, cohesive crew will make or break whether or not they qualify and build that lethality within that organization.
So as you move from the table sixes to doing platoon live fires, potentially company live fires, are there things that you can incorporate immediately to try to make those adjustments without derailing the training that's already lined up?
Yeah. I mean, you don't have a lot of time between crew level gunnery and moving into your collective period. But I think one important thing is to always, and, you know, I'm a big fan of AARs, after action reviews. So one thing you can quickly do is take those lessons learned at a crew level. Because again, even if you're talking at a platoon level live fire, the success or failure, no matter, you know, what collective training you do, the success or failure still relies within those crews. So if you take those lessons learned and you're able to quickly adapt them into moving to that next level of training, that'll be big.
Some of the other units around the Army have had a heightened discussion recently about field craft. Being able to get junior NCOs to understand priorities of work, camouflage during halts, land navigation with or without electronic systems aiding them. And one of the answers that you're seeing out of some units is that, you know, one of the best ways to do that is to do extended field training, i.e. 30 or 45 days in the field at home station. Regardless of whether that's what you're able to do, how are your units getting after the skills required to survive in contested environments when you have this demand of time always on you?
So I'm a firm believer that once you leave Garrison, training has started, right? There's no admin move out to a range. Once you take that tank or Brad or JLTV, whatever vehicle it is, out of that motor pool, it is time to train. And so, you know, camouflaging the noise and light discipline, the field craft that you talk about, those things are trained as soon as they leave the motor pool. But that's a part of field craft, right? And I agree it's a lost art, and it's one of the hardest things to get a soldier to understand why it's important. But it is definitely a mindset in your organization and laying out the expectations that as soon as that vehicle leaves and you're in the field environment, it is game on, and those field craft skills have to come into play.
To share a story with you, decades ago, I was at JRTC. I was on a guest OC rotation, and we had a conversation with some of the OCs there about what made units better during a rotation. And one of their comments that kind of stayed with me for a couple decades was that it was the discipline at the junior NCO level and enforcing standards more than how much time a unit got to train at home station that impacted how well they did at a rotation. How do you see empowering the E5s and E6s in your formations and to enforce standards as a key to meeting the proficiency goals that your commander has set?
It is absolutely key. The Corps of Non-Commissioned Officers is their standard bearers. Whatever that NCO does or fails to do, and you can say that from sergeant all the way up to sergeant major of the Army, you're giving the soldiers a leader to emulate, for better or worse. And we had the same discussion when we were at NTC with the cadre there. And I was told the same thing from Lead 7 Command Sergeant Major Carvet Tate. Told me, he said, it's not going to matter how much time you have at home station and training. It's going to make or break your rotation is going to be the discipline of your formation. So when he drives out to the box, you know, you're in the middle of the desert. I call it the high desert. When you're in the middle of the desert, it's pitch black, and you see, you know, 50,000 lights out there in the middle of the desert because it's an undisciplined formation. Soldiers are not adhering to field craft, noise and light discipline, etc. And it absolutely starts with the sergeant and that staff sergeant level of enforcing those standards. And if they're the ones that are doing it, then their soldiers are going to do it.
You talked about your deployment to support UCOM. What were some of the best training events that came out of that you think are going to benefit your unit years after you're gone?
So there was a lot of discussion for our particular deployment in UCOM about our readiness being diminished because of the mission we had. And I was bought in and on board at the beginning of the deployment, but we were training them on dismounted operations. We were training them, you know, my medics were training their medics. My mounted infantrymen were training them on the Bradleys. And then, you know, my tank companies were training their tank battalions. And during that training, as it started progressing, I realized something. In a conventional way, you know, an armored brigade combat team or armored cab is not going to build readiness in the sense of we're not going to qualify crews, we're not going to, you know, conduct platoon live fire. But what we did do was, and the SMA says it all the time, be brilliant at the basics. It brought my formation back to the basics, to the 10 level skill task. They got so many reps and sets at those 10 level tasks that made them SMEs and made them experts again. And then we redeployed and it went back into the Army force. And so at the end of that deployment, I would argue that yes, we didn't build the traditional readiness, but we gave back to the Army a valuable non-commissioned officer corps across the Army.
Looking back at your entire career, Is there any training that you come back to and think, that is the standard? That was great training, and I want to make that happen as a leader. And what made it stick with you?
Yeah, it was my first gunnery as a private. 2003, 2004-ish in the 3rd Armored Cavalry Regiment, which they will soon be the 3rd Armored Cavalry Regiment again. And really, it stuck with me for a couple of reasons. One, the reps and sets that my NCOs, my senior NCOs, my platoon sergeant, and my tank commander made me go through for GST, a go, just to get a go was not the standard. I had to be a master at those tasks. And two, I knew the training was important because my life depended on it. I knew I was going into combat. And that still sticks with me today. And it was easy my first 10 years of my career because every time we did a training event, we knew that we were going into combat and our lives depended on that training. And the soldiers now and kind of the generation, for lack of a better term, in the Army, we're not at war. I mean, we're constantly being contested in different avenues, but we're not in combat right now. And so that first gunnery that I had, it stuck with me at every echelon. It really stuck with me in 163 when we were trying to navigate those new tables and trying to figure out as a battalion command sergeant major how I can convey and relay to my subordinates how important it was that the training they were executing. But yeah, my first gunnery.
That one influenced you to want to be a leader and stay with the Army, I'm sure. As you look back at some training event where you were the senior on, what was one training event that turned out really well because it reinforced some of those things that we've talked about in terms of training management and involving the NCOs that made it a great event?
So I would have to say brigade levels NTC 2507. What made it so great and memorable was I talked about it's the norm for a brigade combat team to go into a CTC at platoon live fire complete. There was a lot of pressure on my organization because they thought we weren't going to perform well because we weren't trained to where we should have been going into CTC. So the pressure was coming from NTC itself. And as we got on the ground, I think my organization hit every roadblock from trains being late. We didn't have the right equipment we did a west to east rotation. And the difference there is on a west rotation, all your combat power has to be headed up versus an east rotation. You can echelon your formation out much easier. We couldn't sustain ourselves. We hadn't done any collective sustainment training. And quite honestly, you can do as much home station training as you want, but there's no other place, at least in the continental United States, that you can spread an armored brigade combat team out 25, 30 kilometers and have to try to sustain it. It was a very difficult rotation, but to see where we were in training day 1 to training day 14 was phenomenal. And at the brigade level, being able to see the entire organization and that trip, that progression was, it'll go down. And, I'm trying to do 30 years in the Army, but I guarantee you that'll go down as one of the most memorable training events I've ever had.
Excellent, Sergeant Major. Thanks for your time today. I think these were some very valuable insights on NCO development and NCOs and training. Is there anything else that you would like to share with our audience before we leave off?
I just want to say I'm grateful for this opportunity. I think it's important for senior non-commissioned officers to take these venues, share our experiences. I think it's how we shape and continue to shape our Army. So very thankful for the opportunity today. Thanks for everything.
Today we discussed developing NCOs and ways NCOs can improve training. You can find call products such as First 100 Days NCO and Home Station Training for more insights into topics discussed. Plus, our entire catalog of print and digital publications available for download on our CAC-enabled site. There you can request print products shipped to you. Call CTC bulletins and post-exercise reports offer lessons learned from recent unit operations in a variety of environments. If you have trouble finding information on our website, use the Request for Information tab and receive direct feedback from a call analyst. Finally, if you have a best practice to submit or a capability gap that requires a .MIL-PF solution, submit observations directly to call using the Quickfire portal on our website. I would like to thank all our call team members for helping develop this podcast and our producer, Ms. Paige Cox. Like and subscribe to our podcast and follow us on social media and see more resources available at www.army.mil/call. Thank you for listening to Call's podcast, Insights from the Fight. We're dedicated to providing you with the insights you need to lead, train, and fight today and in the future. Join us next time for another discussion on Army lessons learned.